Hi, this is Cammie Britt, and you're listening to Everything Under the Sun on KDNK.
Thanks, Cammie. Indeed, this is Everything Under the Sun on KDNK. I'm your host, Raleigh Burley, and I have the honor of being joined in studio today by the new executive director of the Aspen Science Center, Anna Volker. Anna, how are you today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. So excited to be here.
Thanks so much for joining me here at KDNK. What do you think? First time at the studio?
I love it. It's wonderful. Yeah, it's super awesome to be here and so excited to get to join you for today.
And so to begin, what do people need to know about you? Where did you come from? How did you get into this new position?
Yeah, great question. So previously, I was with the Ohio State University's Astronomy Department, and I've always been really passionate about making science and space and STEM in general accessible to everyone. And so that's sort of what my background is in, and I spent a couple years working for NASA at a couple different NASA centers doing science outreach, and ultimately joined here at the Aspen Science Center just last month. So excited to be here in the Valley.
And at 25 years old, I have to brag, because that's a great start.
Thank you so much.
You're on a good trajectory. And so, I mean, even before your time coming to the Aspen Science Center, you also created the SciAccess initiative when you were at Ohio State. And that's all around inclusivity as well. So you did tell me a little story, and I was able to put some of it in the newspaper, but what was the impetus? Like, what gave you this idea that we need to make science inclusive?
Yeah, great question. So as you touched on perfectly, SciAccess in general is all about promoting disability inclusion and diversity in the STEM fields. And for me, that journey actually started through theater. So I've always loved theater, and I took an acting class when I was a student back at Ohio State called Shakespeare and Autism. And so I started working with children on the autism spectrum through a variety of acting games that were designed to foster imaginative play and help students step outside their comfort zone. And I really just fell in love with the way this theater outreach was reaching people and helping them open up in new and incredible ways. And I realized we had a dire need for that in the sciences. And so from there, I really became interested in how I could kind of merge these passions and start working towards inclusion and diversity in science itself.
Mm-hmm. And to great success.
Thank you.
You had this conference last year that had over 1,000 people joining from over 46 countries.
That's correct. Yeah.
Or exactly 46.
Yeah, 46 countries and all 7 continents, so it was really exciting. And we're really actually very excited. We just received a grant from the Ohio State University to host that again this year, which will be taking place virtually in November. So the SciAccess conference originally started in 2019 to bring people together to share best practices and innovations in accessibility in the sciences. And so I'm so excited to see that continue to grow and continue to reach more people.
And in 2019, was it in person?
It was, yeah. So it was in person in Columbus. So for our first year, we had 250 folks come out and had some really awesome keynote speakers, from astronaut Anousheh Ansari, who's the first Muslim woman ever in space, and Dr. Temple Grandin, who's a professor of animal sciences and a renowned autism advocate.
And do you see yourselves continuing in a virtual setting just because it's able to reach so many people?
Yeah, great question. I was really taken aback in 2020 when we did go virtual, just how international it became. And so for this year, 2021, we will be all virtual. But moving forward, I'm really excited to adopt a hybrid approach where we still have that sort of in-person community around the conference, as well as allowing folks to tune in all over the world. And I think I shared when we did our interview for the newspaper article that we even had folks studying neutrinos at the South Pole in Antarctica, and we had to wait, time their session for when a satellite was passing over the South Pole so they could tune in. And so there's that kind of excitement of having folks all over the world who were able to exchange their experiences and their passions for inclusion in the sciences.
Wow. And it appears that the Aspen Science Center has been gracious enough and maybe wise enough to allow you to continue to be very involved with SciAccess and make that a component of your work.
Exactly right. Yes, they are. I'm so excited to share one of our new key partners for all of these projects. And so one of the things I'm really looking forward to is making greater connections with folks in the local community, because I know there are so many awesome nonprofits doing great work here on the ground in the Roaring Fork Valley. And so I'm really excited to integrate this work that I've done in the past with SciAccess into the Aspen Science Center and to the network of wonderful nonprofits working here in the Valley.
So what do you make of all this current news of, Jeff Bezos and others going into space?
Yeah, it's a great question. For me, it's actually been really exciting because one of our newest projects is called Mission Astro Access. And this is an initiative that I'm leading in partnership with George Whitesides, who's actually the former CEO of Virgin Galactic. And our long-term goal is actually to pave the way for disabled astronauts. And so it's been so interesting and fascinating to see kind of more and more civilians going to space right before our eyes. And I think that that creates a really wonderful opportunity to change the focus on inclusion and to, you know, see how far we can push the boundaries for who gets to go to space and what that really looks like. So in this year, in 2021, as a first step towards that long-term goal, we're doing what's called a parabolic flight. So that's when you experience zero gravity by going in an airplane that flies up and down in big parabolas. And this is something we're actually doing this October and hosting an open call for applications so that a disabled adult in America can apply to be a crew member and help us do demonstrations that show all the capabilities of folks to work in microgravity, regardless of disability here on Earth.
Wow, that sounds so cool.
Thank you. We're really excited.
And you showed me a photo of Stephen Hawking participating on one of those flights.
That's correct. Yeah. So we've seen folks such as Professor Stephen Hawking do these flights. So we already know that, you know, folks with disabilities can be in microgravity. But what we really want to prove and to demonstrate is that they also can be valued and assets and crew members who are contributing to a mission's success. And that's really important because we really want to address these barriers and obstacles that are standing in people's way when it comes to going to outer space. And that's a big one, are these concerns about what people can and cannot do. And they're often founded in ableism or just in a lack of knowledge because this has not been done before. And so that's what we're really excited to work towards. And we're partnering with a lot of really awesome organizations who are leaders in the disability community as well as the space community to make that possible.
And you point out that by striving for inclusivity, really everybody benefits, because in the inevitable scenario where somebody becomes disabled on a mission, if you have built in kind of other ways of doing things that doesn't require to be fully abled, then you can possibly save lives.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. And I think a really good example of that was when we had a few years back, astronaut Chris Hadfield had a mixture of soap and water explode in his helmet when he was on a spacewalk. And so he was temporarily blinded and left in a situation where he could not perform any of his tasks because all of the systems require you to have sight. Whereas if we design for astronauts who are blind and low vision from the start and incorporate what we call universal principles of design into these space systems, then he would have been able to benefit from that by having access to doing his systems and doing these maneuvers without needing to rely on only one sense.
So for anyone who's listening now and wants to be a part of this crew, where can they find the application? And I see that it closes on August 15th, so they would have about 3 weeks to get it done.
That's correct. Yeah, they can visit astroaccess.org, which is astroaccess.org, and submit an application online before August 15th.
And that information is also on page 15 of this week's Sopra Sun. For people who are just tuning in, I have the joy of being joined by Anna Volker here in the studio. Anna is the new executive director for the Aspen Science Center, and bringing all kinds of experience and fresh insight and a lot of enthusiasm to that organization.
Thank you.
And so you will be at Mountain Fair, you were informing me, pretty much every day.
We will, yeah. So you can come find us at the Aspen Science Center booth at the Carbondale Mountain Fair this weekend. We'll be there with some of our intern team and talking about all of our upcoming summer programs. So something we're really excited about this summer is introducing a new series of programs for students all ages who are interested in STEM. Next week, I'm really excited to be teaching our Rocket Camp. So we'll have kids ages 8 to 13 in our Rocket Camp, which will be a week-long learning all about rockets and getting to build our own. So that'll be a really fun time.
Awesome. So you'll be the one teaching that.
I will, yes. And we also have other awesome teachers on our team teaching things like Robotics Camp or Little Scientists for younger kids. So parents with kids ages 3 to 5, we actually have camps for Little Scientists and Little Engineers as part of our early STEM education programming.
Yeah, we saw some of those bilingual kits go out over the pandemic.
Right.
Annie is fantastic.
Absolutely.
Took the initiative on that. And visiting that space in the 3rd Street Center, there's all kinds of cool equipment, a 3D scanner, 3D printer, giant telescope that you brought.
Right. Yeah, I'm really excited to have some new technology that we can be using to do things like 3D printing galaxies and rockets and different tools that historically I've done specifically for blind students so that they can feel these images instead of seeing them. But what I think is great that you touched on earlier is that that really increases engagement and education opportunities for everyone. So that's something I'm really excited about when it comes to these different, you know, multi-sensory approaches to science education.
Mm. And so Shakespeare's and autism class, that was a spark that really instigated Sci-Access for you. But I feel like this passion for inclusivity must have predated that.
Yeah, I think it's just been a lifelong thing for me. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's something I've always been really passionate about and so excited to have a place to channel that energy and to try to make progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I can say that it was great to write an article that incorporated the they, them pronouns, which
thank you
is becoming something that is just a part of, you know, journalism today, but it wasn't the case even like 2 or 3 years ago.
Absolutely. And that's something that we incorporate with all of our Sci-Access events, the conference especially. We have having pronouns on the name tags a default. And that's something that I think is just such a big change. So instead of just folks, you know, such as myself, who use they, them pronouns, being the only one to write it, when we make that the default setting for, you know, the conference, I think that does sends such a powerful message of normalizing that practice for everyone. And so that's something I've been really excited to get to incorporate in all of our programming.
And how did it feel for you to almost like have society grant that permission of like, well, we can respect that they, them is your pronouns? How was that? Because it must have been hard prior to that being something that was so widely accepted.
Yeah, and I mean, one thing I would say is that I think we still have a lot of work to do and a lot of progress that has yet to be made when it comes to that. And so I think there are a lot of spaces, such as the disability community, where I see them really embracing that strongly. So a lot of the conferences I go to in that realm have that down, and they know that that's a practice to adopt. Whereas in the STEM fields, I think they're way further behind. It's just not something that's been brought to the forefront as something that doesn't just need to be in queer spaces, but should get to be incorporated in all spaces, because queer people are in all spaces. And so I think that that's really something that I'm excited to see continue to change and continue to make progress as we help normalize those practices. Yeah.
Wow, cool. And for people who are excited to hear about all of these neat things that are happening through the Aspen Science Center, as much as they're reaching preschool age children through middle and high school, you also offer programming for adults, right?
We absolutely do. And one program I'm particularly excited about is next month on August 7th, we're doing a stargazing night up on Independence Pass. So we'll bring out all our telescopes and do some really exciting stargazing for all ages. And you can find all about that on aspensciencecenter.org.
And have you met this astrophotographer, Brian White, before?
I haven't, no, okay. But he's worked with our programs in the past. So Brian White is a local astrophotographer who will be joining us on the mountain, helping guide folks understand what exactly they're looking at through those telescopes.
And so it is a ticketed event,
it
correct?
Is, that's correct. It's $25 per ticket.
Okay. And then you get to go to the top of Independence Pass and look through some high-powered telescopes. So even beyond just seeing the rings of Saturn, you get to see deep.
That's exactly right, yeah. Of course, it all depends on our weather, but we're really hoping to get to see things like nebulas and some things that you just cannot see with the eye without this telescope ability, and you really can't see without quite large telescopes. So we have some really large scopes that we'll be bringing and having support from astrophotographer Brian White, as well as our local intern team who've been with us doing such great work on all our programs this summer.
Nice. Well, that sounds cool. I'm going to try and make it out for that.
Yeah.
For certain.
Hope you do.
Well, is there anything else that you'd like to inform people about, opportunities or...
Yeah, I would just say I think I'm really excited to let folks in the local area know just how much is happening at the Aspen Science Center right now. I think a lot of folks don't realize that we have summer programs for kids happening really every week. And then beyond that, we're really excited for next year to start introducing some after-school programs so that we can continue to be connecting with students in the Valley while also having our stargazing nights and other all-ages programs to really promote that lifelong learning and embrace of the discovery and excitement that is science.
Oh, excellent. Something to pay attention to. Do you have a newsletter that people can sign up for to stay keen on all of that?
Yes. Yes, actually we do. So if you go to aspensciencecenter.org, you can sign up for our email list, or you can meet us here at the Carbondale Mountain Fair this weekend and sign you up there. So we'd love to have everyone join.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Anna, for joining us here on Everything Under the Sun. And we look forward to all the things that you're going to do with this nonprofit organization. We're lucky to have you.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to be here.
And this being Mountain Fair weekend, don't forget that you can pick up this week's issue of the Sopra Sun and find the Mountain Fair guide inside. It is over 60 pages thick, bilingual, and full of all the fun activities, costume guide, it names all the booths that you can visit. So you will want to find that while it's on stands. You can also get your copy of the program in the park when the festivities open at 4 p.m. And if you're shy to enter the park, don't forget that KDNK will live broadcast the entire thing, so you don't really have to go any further than your radio to participate in Mountain Fair. I'm Raleigh Burley. Thanks for tuning in, and stay tuned for Valley Voices coming up next.
DJ Billy Bob Speaks calling in with a Mountain Fair memory from when Amy Kimberly first started out running the show, she asked me, why are the cops asking me to show them the bands? I don't want to have to do that. And I said, well, it goes back to sometime in the late 80s, early 90s, when there was a fight on Saturday night after the fair, and somebody got knocked out. Everybody walked away from it, and the guy had been really drunk and started it. And so everybody walked away from it after it was done while he was laying there. But as it turned out, it turned to be a small puddle of his face and landed in, and he drowned. So the cops got involved in the music, and it kind of put a damper on the fair for a while there musically. But we did have some good acts come through in the meantime. But you had to see them in the middle of the afternoon. You couldn't see, like, the act that would have closed at the end of the show, like Amy likes to run the show and started doing it right away and, you know, didn't even care what the cops thought. Well, of course, the first year, Gabriel Diosa and the Motet are playing together up there and cranking away, and the cops stormed the stage because the band wouldn't get off, even though it was an hour before the fair had to actually technically shut down. Well, cops got a lot of flack for that and a lot of letters to the editor, people coming to town, all meetings and getting all uppity about it. And so that sort of rearranged the musical paradigm. And since then, we've been back on a normal format with what goes on musically at a festival, compared to the way it used to be. Well, that's my Mountain Fair memory, just to share with you, one of many, and I hope a lot of other folks call in and talk about theirs, too. Y'all have a good Mountain Fair now you're here. Bye.
You can record a message with Katie and Kay's Mountain Fair Memory Machine by calling 970-510-3250.
What's special about the people of Carbondale?
They're just really nice and local and not too rambunctious.
Hi, this is Cammie, and this is my favorite Mountain Fair memory. My favorite memory is actually just getting my face painted. I was probably 10 at least. I got a vine painted on my face. Yep. They said they loved it and it looked great.
Do you have a favorite Mountain Fair memory that you'd like to share with our community? Well, some say if you can remember, you weren't there. But we know you have stories. You can record a message with Katie and Kay's Mountain Fair Memory Machine by calling 970-510-3250.
All set?
Hold on to your seats.
The world is like a ride, and it's fun.
Carbondale. The Carbondale Mountain Fair is this weekend. Yeah.
Well, so my name is Brenda Buchanan, and one of my very favorite memories is, I think it was the 8th annual Mountain Fair. A bunch of crazy people and myself decided to have a small stage, the children's part of the park, although it wasn't the children's part then, and we called it the Oasis. And we staged Dr. Limbaugh's incredible Mountain Fair Elixir of Life, kind of an old-fashioned sort of traveling, hawking this magic elixir. This miracle elixir would cure you of anything. It would make ugly women pretty, a grown man weep. I mean, you name it, it could do it. And we had one testimonial from a group of wild jungle women from Borneo. So they were frothing at the mouth and screaming and rolling their eyes back in their heads. And Dr. Limbaugh put in a bottle of Dr. Limbaugh's Elixir of Life. And the girls began to smile, and one of them got so excited that her top fell off. It was totally unplanned, and of course, we were all delighted.
Do you have a favorite Mountain Fair memory that you'd like to share with our community? Well, some say if you can remember, you weren't there, but we know you have stories. You can record a message with Katie and Kay's Mountain Fair Memory Machine by calling 970-510-3250.
This is Keith Edquist, and from about 1977 to 1987, I had a fried chicken and potato salad booth in the food section of Mountain Fair. It was affectionately called Norm's Fry 'em Up Solid, after the Ry Cooder song, Champ 'em Up Solid, so it won't come down. And my father used to come up from Colorado Springs and help me, and he'd do a little carnival barker thing out in front of the stand, besides providing me with a little change apron, keeping track of the money and worrying about the money. He'd do the carnival barker thing. He'd say, come on here, son, we got chicken for you over here. Would you like a wing in the breast or the leg in the rest? And that went on for days, but it was a tremendous amount of fun. And there was a lot of hot grilling, and quarter chickens and whole half chickens and tons of potato salad, and a cook who was busily sucking down beers just to keep the temperature in good stead. Love the Mountain Fair. Sorry to miss it this year. Thanks.
You can record a message with KDNK's Mountain Fair Memory Machine by calling 970-510-3250.